Good afternoon. I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski occupies a rare place among her 99 colleagues. She doesn't necessarily stick to what party leaders would want her to do, and her propensity to cross the aisle could stand between Trump and his agenda. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports on Murkowski's spot in the dynamic of the Senate as it switches to Republican control.
When Donald Trump writes a norm-busting social media post or names a controversial cabinet nominee, reporters flock to this marble corridor outside the Senate chamber and wait for senators to arrive. The senators always in demand are the Republican moderates, Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski. Any word they say could be a national news story. Like when Trump announced former Congressman Matt Gaetz to lead the Department of Justice. Reporters asked Murkowski if she thought he was a serious candidate.
Not as far as I'm concerned.
News outlets as far away as France and New Zealand reported those six words from Murkowski. It's a question a minute for her these days. Does she think Trump can deploy the military to conduct deportations? Is she willing to have the Senate step aside so Trump can make recess appointments? Murkowski says the tone is intense.
It's just been this constant barrage of, what do you think about this nominee? What do you think about that nominee? And it's like, everybody, hold the phone.
There's a constitutional essence to many of these questions lobbed at her. She's asked in multiple ways if she'll hold the line on the separation of powers.
Yeah, I think it's an incredibly interesting spot. She's used to this, right, at this point.
Charlie Hunt is an assistant professor of political science at Boise State University, and he watches Congress like a favorite TV show, especially now with political transition underway.
Where there's new members, where there's new dynamics, new leaders, that's kind of an exciting time for me. It's sort of like my Super Bowl.
The Senate has been closely divided for 15 years. Hunt says that gives Murkowski and a handful of other moderates some clout. He points to her role in one of the most dramatic votes in recent memory over the attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act in the first year of Trump's first term. Senator John McCain gave it a thumbs down, but that was only decisive because Murkowski and Collins had already voted against it.
It was going to be the centerpiece of the Trump agenda. And it ended up getting voted down at the last minute. This was an instance where she was really using her leverage.
That was a rare moment. Usually, Hunt says, a majority leader won't bring a bill to the floor unless he's got the votes.
As the Senate has stayed really close between Democrats and Republicans, that has meant that people like Murkowski have been able to really hold on to a significant amount of power and been able, I think, to extract a lot of favors and power out of that individual position that they're in.
It's not by accident that a few months after the health care vote, Trump's tax cut bill included a plum Murkowski had sought her whole political career, oil leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So that's the power a moderate like Murkowski can wield in a closely divided Senate. But the Senate Republican majority won't be so razor thin next year. Murkowski and Collins would need two other Republican aisle crossers to swing a vote. Hunt's parlor game is guessing who those senators might be. His money is on the senator-elect from Utah, John Curtis, who used to be a Democrat.
Think issue by issue. You know, if you're a Murkowski, that's kind of what you're looking at. Where can I form these moderate blocks to try to, you know, leverage my influence as much as possible so that me and Susan Collins and maybe John Curtis are not totally marginalized and just steamrolled by the other 49 Republicans plus J.D. Vance.
And in the meantime, the questions keep coming at Murkowski, especially about nominees. Will she support the nominee for defense secretary? How about Trump's selection for FBI director? She'd like to remind people Trump hasn't even been sworn in yet.
President doesn't come into office until the 20th of January. We got a lot of time to do a lot more independent digging about all of these people.
Murkowski believes in the deliberative process, her own and the Senate's. And she often frustrates everyone by not producing definitive answers on the spot. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And just in the last 5 years, the state of Alaska has declared nearly 36 weather or climate-related disasters, nearly double the number 5 years before. As Alaskans grapple with a rapid changing climate, what changes can we expect to the environment? SKNOM's Ben Towson shares a new report attempts to answer that question.
When Rick Toman looked ahead to 2024, one big project was on his list. The veteran climate specialist set his sights on an update to 2019's popular Alaska's Changing Environment report.
This report is now more than 4 years old. It's still getting thousands of unique hits a month on the IARC website. And so that told us this kind of report had enduring value to people in Alaska and beyond.
IARC is the International Arctic Research Center, one of many contributors to the new report. They teamed up with the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Toman's employer, the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy, or ACAP. Over 35 people were brought on to contribute to the project, double the number of the first version. Key contributors like IARC's Brian Bretschneider returned to the project while several new names entered the mix. The cover is an aerial shot of a 2023 landslide in Wrangell that killed 6 people. It sets a poignant tone for the report because, as the name suggests, Alaska's environment is changing, and it's creating new challenges for Alaskans. Toman said they specifically did not want to call it Alaska's changing climate.
Because the impacts of that changing climate are what people really feel. Those are the kinds of things that impact people, and they impact our land and our resources right down to what's for dinner tonight.
To help a wide audience understand those changes, sections like winter precipitation begin with the broad statement, most of Alaska is seeing more midwinter snow. Typically, such statements are followed up with a very simple explanation, like this increase is driven by warmer temperatures that enable air to hold more water vapor. Toman said he worked in tandem with ACAP's science communications lead, Heather McFarland, to break things down to the simplest terms.
Heather will go through and say, that's jargon. I don't understand this. Oh, that's good. And so, and Heather will do that with text from other experts as well to get that into the style that you see there.
While not new to this version, Indigenous voices are now sprinkled throughout the report. The insights provide anecdotal evidence of the changing environment, like Seldovia's Stephen Payden, who shared that, quote, elders also say to wait to pick until after first frost, but now the berries are ripe before that point. These changes are prompting questions about how Alaskans should respond, both at the local and legislative levels.
We certainly hope and expect that this information will help to inform some of those discussions, because we're providing this information in a non-technical way that anybody that's interested can get to.
Printed copies of Alaska's Changing Environment 2.0 are headed to the American Geophysical Union's annual meeting in D.C. next week. Digital and web versions of the report are available now at uaf.iarc.org/communicating-change. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
And tribal members from Wrangell were introduced on the west lawn of the U.S. Capitol building this week for the Christmas tree lighting. They blessed the tree and the people at the ceremony with traditional songs. Tribal Administrator Esther Altsine Reese told the crowd that she was excited to share the Sitka spruce from Wrangell with the nation.
We are honored that the Capitol Christmas tree comes from the homelands of the Shtihin Kwan in Wrangell, Alaska. For the Tlingit people, the trees are our life givers. They are how we create our canoes, our homes, and our totems, which tell our stories. They are our connection to our ancestors, and they show our love for our children.
She says trees also show their love to those who come after them as they steward the land. Reese acknowledged the Wrangell High School STEM students who contributed to keeping the tree green as it traveled for a month across the country. The students built a watering system with PVC piping, mister nozzles, and a battery-powered pump to mist the root wad and recycle the water.
I am so proud of them. I see a couple of them in the front row here for creating the first ever misting system to bring this tree all across the country to be in the wonderful shape that it is in today. Our Tlingit culture is about balance, reciprocity, and respect.
The Wrangell visitors then sang two Tlingit songs to bless the tree. The first was the paddle song to acknowledge the journey the tree went through, and the second was a welcome song to welcome the tree in Washington, D.C., and everyone there. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. Have a great night and enjoy Gallery Walk!